I'm just picking a little section of this. So, one speaks harshly, using speech that is coarse, rough, bitter, and abusive. It makes others angry and causes distraction of mind. It is such speech that one utters. One utters divisive speech. What one hears here, one reports elsewhere to create conflict there. And what one hears elsewhere, one reports here to create conflict here. Thus one creates discord among those united and instills still more, and incites still more those who are in discord. One is fond of dissension, delights and rejoices in it, and utters words that cause dissension. So it's quite descriptive. And it's an interesting one. The first little passage is, you know, it's obvious enough, you know, abusive, harsh speech. And then the second one is I guess it's a subtler kind of speech that we can often attempt to seek solace in. So one's had an argument with someone, and one has a point of view about that person, and then one can seek to reinforce the view of them as bad by then telling others about it and kind of reenacting the view of the person. And so in that way, it kind of multiplies the negativity in a way. So that's what divisive speech tends to do. And just like we want some support, but it's like it's the way of doing it that creates the kind of division, because then that person picks up our perception of the person we had an argument with and tends to view them in that light. So you're kind of conditioning a heart contraction in the social sphere. And it's not to say that one can't express what one has experienced in a way that actually does provide us with a resource. But it's the way of, you know, how do we choose it? What's our intention? So if one expresses, say, I feel really hurt by that, so-and-so spoke in this way, but rather than seeking to incite discord and create a negative feeling. So that's the distinction. And it's a nice one to be aware of. To notice, when am I kind of trying to colour the other's perception of someone else as my fixed view of their rotten? when is that creeping in? You know, just subtly, you know, it can creep in, and to notice that, ooh, actually, and so this is like, it's kind of it's like traffic lights, so this is the stop, it's warning, you know, this actually may not turn out so good, and because that can lead to us being mistrusted by the person we've shared it with, and so it creates a kind of a fear and suspicion, yeah. So on the bright side, then there's the two ways of speaking that one can choose and will have very beneficial effects. And the way that these are described, there's a whole bunch of them. I won't go through the whole list, but in the end, it's described as undertaking or directing intention in this way is like having a pair of dice and all sides are sixes, and you just throw them anywhere you like and it'll just be perfect. So you'll only get two sixes. So it's an interesting description. It's and whereas the other one is all ones. You know, wherever you throw it, it's like could have done better than that. And so it's a nice little analogy, because there is an element of, it's not like we're trying to control, but it's like we're equipping the karmic outcome with very positive potentials. Yeah. So one has given up harsh speech and abstains from it. One's words are gentle, pleasant to hear, endearing, heartwarming, courteous, agreeable to many, and pleasing to many. One has given up divisive speech and abstains from it. What one has heard here, one won't report elsewhere to create conflict there. And what one has heard elsewhere, one will not report here to create conflict here. And that way one unites those who are divided and encourages those who are in harmony. Concord gladdens one. One delights and rejoices in concord and utters words that foster concord. It's basically just the opposite. But I find them kind of rich descriptions of... So it's not just a list of don'ts, but it's actually, well, there is a creativity that one can bring to it in terms of channeling that brightness, and it will have very positive effects. And that emphasis on the sense of unity, I think, is significant, because that seems to be the quality that is aligned to feeling good. When we feel there's unity, there isn't that sense of something to worry about, something to dread, someone to avoid, you know. It's actually, it expands the circle of our awareness and our sense of others. And that unity is a very pleasant kind of abiding on the social level. And again, you know, it's not to say there won't be conflict and there won't be disagreement and misunderstanding, but one can still keep track of that intention. And, you know, am I seeking to create, say, hatred or resentment or bitterness between people? Or am I seeking to express how I feel while still generating mutual respect and harmlessness? So that's the potential there. On this level of the everyday of body and speech, another discourse, I haven't got it here, but I'll paraphrase it, the Kiwi version. there's another nice kind of teaching from the early discourses of the Buddha was walking along with his son. I don't know if you knew he had a son. and his son was just kind of just asking about stuff, and then the Buddha said, so what do you think a mirror is for? And he said, to see yourself. Yes, that's what it's for. And he says, so too are body and speech. And actually he said body, speech and mind, but I'll just emphasize these two for this one. That, and so those two are for seeing oneself. And then he goes on to say that if before undertaking a bodily action, one gets the sense this will be of harm to myself or to others, one should refrain from it and stop. If during undertaking a bodily action, I love these kind of discourses, they're so kind of precise, goes on and on. If during an undertaking a bodily action, one gets the sense this is going to be harmful to myself and to others, then one should stop. And if after having performed an action, one gets the sense that was harmful to myself and to others, then one should feel deeply concerned and endeavor not to do that again in the future. So that's the mirror function. So rather than just kind of being buffeted around by random actions, you know, we can actually keep the mirror there and just get a sense, get a readout. And it may not look a particular way. You know, it's to do with our intentionality, the quality of being we're actually bringing to the action. So again, it doesn't mean, you know, looking like a certain way, looking like a good person or whatever. It's to do with that kind of heart tone and sensing, well, did it cause harm? And you can get a sense, maybe I shouldn't have given him that look. Maybe it was the wrong time for that look of you know, because now he's not speaking to me. So that kind of thing. It's quite mundane every day, but again, it has a potency. And the same with speech and with mind. And the mind aspect we'll look at a little bit later, but the same with, if before, it's kind of interesting, if before one undertakes an action of speech, one reflects, this possibly might be harmful to myself and others. It's often not the way it works, is it? It's like, I have a sense that might be harmful. Because the wiring between brain and tongue is very kind of small. It's like there's a very tiny distance it has to travel. So it's often after one has said that thing again, one reflects, did that cause harm to myself? But then there's that element of choice. So it's not like karma is some kind of deterministic force where we're just victims of it. But actually it's the opposite. It points to the freedom that we have to actually direct how we're manifesting in the world and generate certain effects. And with that kind of mirror quality, which is mindfulness or awareness, then we're in the position to be able to choose. We're more in the position, because the pathways can be quite strong. And even just knowing, being able to track it right back, to getting a feel for, even when one is saying something, to be able to feel the resonance of it, and know, I know what that was. It's quite powerful, because then we have a sense of what we're doing, rather than just an idea of how I should speak or how I shouldn't. Yeah, we're actually getting a sense of what are we generating in this moment, and that's quite powerful. So speech in itself, such a everyday activity can become a great support for meditation, and it can both avoid accumulating a residue of regret, or just that kind of vibration of remembering what one said and one didn't really want to say it, and then one comes to sit, you sort of remember your voice saying it. Did I have to say that? And so it has a very practical function in terms of, actually you can avoid that. And on the other hand, the Buddha actually encouraged one to consciously delight in actions of harmlessness. And it's not a kind of an ego inflation activity. So often in the West we can be like, oh, no, it was nothing, oh, no, I didn't do any good, no, I'm really rotten, actually. But actually we can reflect on consciously, well, when I said that, their face brightened up, I felt freer, it generated a pleasant feeling in the heart. And you can remember that and almost like allow that energy to suffuse one's being, one's mind, consciously, to really rejoice in it. And again, that can be a very powerful experiment. So just see what happens, you can conduct little speech experiments and just get a sense of the results. Even if they seem, even if initially it seems, well, I'm not the kind of person who says that, because often that can be the edge. Actually, what happens if we expand out of that and come directly from the heart and get a sense of that? So the last reflection on this area is just another snippet of a discourse. Let's see if I can remember it. Oh yeah, okay. So in manifesting these this kind of intention in the everyday. In these discourses, it said that one gives, so it's also a gift, one gives to all beings freedom from fear, freedom from hostility, and freedom from oppression. So that's the gift. And in doing so, one in turn receives freedom from fear, freedom from hostility, and freedom from oppression. And that's the gift to ourselves. So we're not kind of put out of the equation, but that it's like that flows back to us. So what we put out comes back to us. And abiding in a sense of freedom from fear, hostility, and oppression is very nice. It feels good, you know, that, if we can generate that. And it's almost like it removes some of the specters that we carry around of what ifs and are they and will they. You know, you can actually clear that out through what we give, what we bring to the world.